call this first meeting of the Property Tax Relief and Local Sales Division to order. So if everyone could take their seats. And I know a real good chair would be offering coffee and rolls as everyone came in this morning. But I said that's a real good chair, Representative Demmer. Appreciate seeing everyone here. This is always a 8 o'clock on a Friday morning is never easy, so appreciate everyone's attendance. And I must honestly say to all of you, members and staff and everyone here in the audience, that this is truly an honor to be able to chair this committee. And this is going to be a very, very important topic that is one that impacts every resident in this state, and I feel very fortunate as the chair to be able to work with a very dedicated group of members, and very pleased to see the member list when that came out, and also just the top-notch and excellent staff, House Research and Fiscal, that I've been able to work with over the years, and looking forward to working with again this year. And also all the lobbyists and everyone who is working towards this goal of property tax relief. We are all players in this. And thank you so much for all of your efforts, and look very much forward to working with you in coming up with property tax relief as this year moves on. I also have a couple thank yous. I do want to thank Speaker Kelleher for recognizing the importance in setting property tax relief as a major goal in creating this division. And Chair Lincheski is not here yet, but I also want to thank her for helping to work through the scope of what this division would be and all the cooperation that she's provided. So with that, I would like to just go through introductions. There are only a couple freshmen this year, but there's always maybe new staff, and I think it's always good just to know who's who and so forth. And I'll start out. I'm Representative Paul Marquardt. This is my fourth term in the legislature. I represent all of Wilkin and Traverse counties and parts of Clay and Becker County. This is my, I guess, third term on the tax committee. And Maury, was Representative Lanning, was there a property tax division your first term when you were on taxes? I don't remember if there was or not. So this might be just the second term on property tax division. So with that, we'll move around here, starting with our vice chair, Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Robin Brown. I represent Freeborn County and portions of Bower County, and I just thank you for giving me the opportunity to vice chair.
We'll start with members, and we'll come back with staff. So, yeah.
Good morning. I'm Representative Diane Loeffler. I represent the 13 neighborhoods of Northeast Minneapolis. I'm in my second term.
I'm Larry Lanning, representative from Moorhead and Northern Clay County, District 9A. And this is my third term on the Tax Committee, and continue this session again on property tax. Happy to do that. And Mr. Chair, neighbor, congratulations.
Thank you.
My name is Joe Mallory. I'm from the north end of North Minneapolis. This is my fourth term on Tax Committee, first on property tax, but I believe there was a property tax I don't know if it was a division or subcommittee when Ron Earhart had it as chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Denise Dietrich. I represent District 47A, which is all of Chaplin and a portion of Coon Rapids, and I'm so used to then telling the audience which school district I represent, so this is going to be different for me. Hennepin County and Anoka County.
I'm Sarah Anderson, and I'm one of the two freshman legislators on this committee, and I'm from the Plymouth Medicine Lake area, and it's kind of nice because Robin and I were roommates at the freshman orientation, so we already know each other pretty well. So,
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members. I'm Randy Demmer. I'm from Hayfield. I represent Dodge County, all of Dodge County, and the western and northern parts of Olmsted County. My third term overall, first term as a member of the Tax Committee, so I'm looking forward. I've been working on education for my first two terms. I'm there now, so I've been looking at property taxes and taxation, but this is the first time I've had a chance to actually work on it in the committee, so looking forward to it. And I hope you're enjoying that office, Mr. Chair.
Well, thank you, Representative Demmer. It was very nice. I haven't found any of the slush funds that you had stashed around, but still looking for that.
Keep looking, Mr. Chair. It's not supposed to be easy.
Well, thank you, members, for that. And if you receive this pink sheet, or some of you, it might be a white sheet with all of our smiley faces on that. But also on the back is a list of all the important contacts, all the staff and members and their LAs and so forth. So use that as time goes on. I'm also now going to start with staff and start with those closest to me here. And Paul and Sarah, who I've just in a very short time been very, very impressed with. You know, we're all rookies in all of this, and I know all of you know that, but they have just done a tremendous job. So if you'd introduce yourselves.
I'm Paul Cummings, and I am Representative Marquardt's legislative assistant, and we'll be working with you.
And I'm Sarah Carlson-Wallath, and I'm the committee administrator for this committee as well as taxes.
Thank you very much. And now, House Research Staff.
I'm Pat Dalton with House Research, and I do the areas of local government aid and local sales taxes.
And I'm Steve Hines, and I cover property taxes and property tax simulations.
Do you want to mention Karen?
And I, colleague Karen Baker is not here this morning, but she will normally be at the table, I expect, most of the hearing days, and she also covers property taxes. Especially administrative aspects of the property tax system, but with House Research, is typically you might have to call us and we'll get it to the right person if you have a request.
Mr. Michael?
I'm Joel Michael, also from House Research. The main area that I covered that I think maybe in this committee is tax increment financing and just, you know, general backup for the rest of House Research staff.
Okay, and fiscal staff.
Good morning. My name is Kathy Schill, and I do fiscal analysis for this committee. So anything having a cost, spreadsheet-wise, come see me. Thanks.
And DFL and Republican Research.
I'm Katie Simon. I'm the DFL researcher for Poverty Tax Division and Taxes.
Thank you.
I'm Craig Stein.
Thank you very much. Anyone from the Department of Revenue here that would care to stand and introduce themselves, please?
I'm Liz Loser. I'm the legislative liaison for the Department of Revenue.
Well, thank you so much. And many of you will get a chance in the audience today to meet also as you testify. Just a kind of a housekeeping announcement here. There are kind of a unique, it's a unique situation that five members of this division are not also on the tax committee. And with the heavy lifting that's going to be done in this division, and I talked with Representative Lincheski, is we're going to be looking at using some of the tax committee time for some of our division meetings. And so I went looking through that, and I just want to double check to make sure I accurately got this, but it would be Representative Anderson, Brown, Dietrich, Loeffler, and Haymar. And it looks like on Tuesday and Wednesday during this tax committee time, there's agricultural finance, bioscience, and housing and health finance. And none of you are on any of those committees, if I saw that right. I think that will work. So if we do overspill into, it would be either a Tuesday or Wednesday tax committee time slot. So don't get on any further committees that would go into those areas, because there's going to be a lot of work in this committee, and so we'll be using those times. In addition to this, we won't be leaving the 8 o'clock Friday time, however, we will be staying at this time. So, well, good, that will work. couple of the rules of the committee, and oh, before I go on, Representative Earhart, absolutely, who is the Republican lead on this committee, and would you care to give a introduction there, Representative Earhart?
Let's see. I am from the western suburbs of Minneapolis, the city of Edina. Thank you. We have terrible property taxes. I hope we can do something.
Thank you, Representative Earhart. As you notice, there aren't any written rules today. There may be, but we have a relatively small group here. And I think it is going to come down to a couple basic things, common courtesy and common sense. And as a division, as a committee, our major task is to listen, and listening to testifiers and then deciding what we want to do with that. So I think most of that comes in just the respect and attention that we provide to testifiers. So with that, all I ask is, other than our people right here, no laptops, please turn off your cell phones, no reading of newspapers, that type of thing. I mean, just a lot of times we get in and it's busy and you've got work, but the testimony that we're going to hear is going to be so important. It's going to be hearing how people are being impacted by property taxes. And also, I ask members to work with staff. We have great staff, great research here at the House, and please work with them as we work through this process. As far as the goals of the committee, it's basic. It's to produce a product, and that is to provide property tax relief for the residents of Minnesota. And I would challenge all members to bring all of your experiences and ideas to the table. In that way, we can produce the strongest bill and the best bill, and a bill that looks forward and benefits all residents of this state. So, we're going to have lots of different issues, and one thing about property tax relief is there are many movable parts and how it all works together. But ultimately, the report that we produce here is a product that, when you put all those movable parts together, provides permanent and fair property tax relief to every area of this state. And so that's going to be the premier goal. We're going to look at a lot of areas: assessments, market values, school levies, property tax refunds, LGA, county program aid, you name it. I want members to look at this also as a more than just this year. Some of these things, it's going to be a two-year process. I mean, we're not going to get it all done. There might be, just as an example, maybe something on agricultural valuations or assessment practices or whatever. I don't know. But I kind of think that we're probably not going to do all of this just in one year, and it's actually probably going to be a two-year process. So with all of that, again, I'm truly and honored to be working with all of you and look forward to what we can produce out of here by the end of August. I mean by the end of May. So with that, we're going to start out with testifiers, and we're going to listen to city and county officials. And I thought it was important that we listen to those folks who work the closest to the people and our constituents that we represent back home. And so it's important that we hear from those who day in and day out are working with our local officials and with our residents, and more specifically how the property tax system is impacting them, and also what are your plans, what are your goals, what would you like to see us tackle in this session. I think it's also important that this partnership between the state and local governments be a strong one, because when we can work together and form a strong working relationship, we truly are going to have a one Minnesota that is going to provide great quality of life for people around the state. So with that, I'd like to call the League of Minnesota Cities first, and we're hearing from six city groups today, three county groups today, and in the next week or two, we will also be hearing from schools and townships and agricultural groups and businesses and seasonal rec and seniors. And, you know, we could probably go more groups, but we're just getting a feel, hearing what those issues are, kind of getting a taste of what's out there. Now, our schedule today is pretty tight. So we'll be kind of keeping to a time frame. After each person, each group has testified, we'll probably have time for a question or two, but we'll have plenty of time during the course of events to really dig into things. So today is kind of the here of what's going on, but we'll certainly have time for a question or two after each one. So, Mr. Carlson, you'd introduce yourself, and thanks for being here.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Gary Carlson. I'm with the League of Minnesota Cities. I apologize for my voice today. I'm battling a little bit of a chest cold. And I understand the buzz in the audience, Representative Marquardt, was that you're trying to delay, you and Maury Lanning are trying to delay your return to the cold country up there, because I think it's a little bit colder up there this morning than it is down here. So we'll do our best to keep you here in St. Paul for a little while longer. What I'd like to do today is bring your attention to a report that the League of Minnesota Cities conducted about 2 years ago in the wake of the very severe state budget crisis. And we've distributed a copy of that report titled Renew the Partnership. And that report was the culmination of a number of months of work by a broad array of city officials. You can see who was involved in that report if you look on the left spine of that report. But really, let me say that the report was not just caused by the deep budget crisis of 2003 and 2004. This was a perception by many of our city officials that we've had a long term, and I mean, you know, more than maybe two decades worth of a slow, gradual erosion of the partnership between the state and, in particular, cities, but I think you'll hear from the counties today as well that they perhaps feel the same way. And so we gathered a group of fairly prominent city officials, and interestingly, in that group, we also had a former finance commissioner and a former a state finance commissioner and a former Department of Revenue commissioner who now serve in city government, and they have the unique perspective of viewing the state-local relationship from both sides of the equation. We also had tremendous leadership from the mayor of Moorhead, Mark Voxland, and the former mayor of Plymouth, Judy Johnson, and the former mayor of St. Cloud, John Ellenbecker, in producing this report. But I've only got a few minutes to go through these recommendations, and I'd like to just draw your attention to a few things. First of all, we started the report by looking at tax principles. How should we construct our tax system in the state of Minnesota? And personally, I've had a long-standing interest in looking at developing rather a model revenue system for local governments in the state of Minnesota. And for those of you who have been around a while, you may recall that back in, I believe it was the early 90s, under the leadership of the research staff at the Department of Revenue, the state developed its own model revenue system. And I think you can still find that document today. And there's some great relevance in that document, I think, even today. But we wanted to look at the state-local relationship and the local revenue sources and try to make some recommendations to you about how we could renew the partnership with the state of Minnesota. But you'll see in the report that we highlight some of those very tax concepts that you'll always hear about: accountability, certainty, adequacy, flexibility, and equity. Some of those principles that we want to try to achieve in developing a state-local tax structure in the state of Minnesota. Let me say, though, and just to bring your attention to it, some of those very principles that I think we all would probably applaud do have some trade-offs, and frequently we'll have situations where we want to achieve equity, for example, but to achieve equity, we have to forego some of the simplicity or the accountability of the system, because they have to make it more complex to achieve equity. Perhaps a great example right here in this committee is Representative Lanning's area, where he has the pressures of competing with the property tax and state tax structures in North Dakota. And his community and an area up in his part of the state has a real different tax competition problem that we have to address. And over the years, we've actually developed a series of programs that you'll learn more about that actually help the border cities deal with the tax competition in their areas. So to achieve the equity, to achieve a reasonable tax structure, we frequently have to introduce more complexity into the system. And that's one of those trade-offs that I was referring to. But with my short amount of time here, let me just draw your attention to a few recommendations in the report that I think are relevant to this committee and ones that we hope you'll consider as you debate how we look at the property tax system in the coming months. Under the accountability topic, one of the things that we've looked at the League of Minnesota Cities is trying to restructure the market value homestead credit program. And this, the impetus for changing the system came actually after the state budget crisis and the changes made in the program in 2003 and 2004, and then the extension of those market value homestead credit cuts to 2005 and 2006. Representative Lencheski actually carried a bill on our behalf where we tried to reconstruct the market value homestead credit to make it a direct payment to the taxpayers rather than have the cities and counties and school districts be the intermediary recipient of that money. The problem is that the way the system works right now is that the legislature can reduce or eliminate that program reimbursement for some cities, and yet the credit still shows up on the tax form. And what happens in the city budget is they actually receive less tax revenue than they actually levied, than they actually told property taxpayers they were going to levy. And that is a problem. It has been a problem for many cities. In fact, last summer, one of our cities called me up, and he hadn't realized, the city administrator had not realized the way this homestead credit cut worked. And he didn't understand why he wasn't getting all of his property tax levy. Well, in fact, it's the complicated nature of that system and how it works. In fact, the city levied, let's just say they levied $1 million, and they were only getting $950,000 in reimbursements from taxpayers. And he thought the rest of it was delinquent taxes, but in fact, it was the state not paying the reimbursement to the city. So the city was levying $1 and getting about 95 cents on the dollar, and that was a problem for the accountability side of the equation. Another recommendation in there is called, or refers to creating an ACIR. In Minnesota, and Representative Loffer, you may remember that we had an ACIR when you worked for the League of Minnesota Cities, and we had several city and county officials serving on a commission that looked at the state-local fiscal relationship. We have not introduced legislation to create an ACIR, but we have informally started an ACIR concept, and we have been having discussions with the governor's office, with the Minnesota School Boards Association, and with the Association of Minnesota Counties to discuss the very important issues related to state-local finance. And although rather informal, I think we've had a very good dialogue and some very good understanding of each other's concerns, and we're hoping that that ACIR, although informal, will continue to serve as a dialogue forum for cities, counties, schools, and the state. And then two other quick issues on the accountability side. One is, for those of you who are new to the committee or have not served in local government, you may not realize that cities and counties in particular pay sales tax on their purchases for the state of Minnesota. This was a state law change that was enacted in 1991, and it was done at a time when the state faced a budget crisis. What happens now is that when cities and counties make purchases for virtually everything we purchase, there are some exemptions, we pay a 6.5% sales tax to the state of Minnesota. That does cause some accountability issues and concerns, and many of our city officials remain concerned that when they build an important public facility, even when they buy a computer, they end up paying an additional 6.5% sales tax on that, and it seems a little bit odd to them that they receive state aid and then they pay some out in the sales tax realm. So we're going to be looking at ways to reduce or eliminate that sales tax on local government purchases. That's been a longstanding goal of the leagues. The problem is, frankly, it costs the state of Minnesota quite a bit of money. But keep that in mind. You'll probably see some bill introductions related to sales tax elimination for government. And then finally, one of the other aspects of accountability that we've been working on is ways to help inform taxpayers about what is causing their tax burdens to rise and fall. We have in Minnesota a very elaborate system of truth in taxation that tries to educate our taxpayers about what is causing their taxes to rise and fall. But we have other factors that are less known that do have a tremendous impact on an individual's tax bill. And the most current example that I could probably point you to is that we've been slowly phasing out a program known as limited market value. And by phasing that out, we're phasing in value for homes across the state of Minnesota, and that is causing the homes to absorb a greater share of the property tax. Now, that fact is not really shown or expressed very adequately on the Truth in Taxation forms, but it is causing homeowner taxes to rise much faster than the culmination of the city, county, and school district levy increases. So we're looking at ways to help better educate property taxpayers about the effects of all of the aspects of the very complicated state property tax system. Moving on to certainty, and losing my voice here, one of the things we'd like to have you consider in this committee, and probably in other budget committees, is related to the state's own budget. And as I've talked about trying to develop a more certain system for local governments, we realize that as your budget goes, so goes our budget. And we've seen that from time and time again over the years that I've been working here at the Capitol. But when the budget crisis hit in 2003, I think every city official, every county official, every school official understood that when the state hits the rocks, we're going to hit some rocks. And certainly that did happen. But there have been some good, thoughtful pieces done on recommendations about what you can do to stabilize your budget. And there was a report issued, or an article in the Citizens League Journal a few years ago that was authored by state economist Tom Stinson that made some recommendations about ways to stabilize your budget. And a couple of things to think about in his recommendations are to reduce the reliance on the very volatile capital gains tax and maybe increase the reliance on the income tax, which tends to be somewhat more stable than capital gains. Stinson also recommended reducing the reliance on corporate income tax and maybe increasing the reliance on the state property tax. Now, these can be done in revenue-neutral ways so as to not raise taxes overall, but the goal of the Stinson recommendations were to look at ways to reduce the volatility of the state budget and therefore, as we see it, reduce the volatility of our partnership with you in providing services to citizens. So we'd recommend that you consider some of the Stinson recommendations that were offered up, and if you'd like, I can get you a copy of that article. I'm sorry I don't have it today, but we think there's some good thoughtful pieces in there about ways to reduce the volatility of your budget. One other aspect that I should have mentioned in the Stinson recommendations was to expand the sales tax base. And you can do this, again, in a revenue-neutral way. You may recall that back under Governor Ventura, he actually tried to expand the sales tax base more broadly to other goods and services that are not currently taxed and maybe reduce the 6.5% rate. And again, by doing that, by taxing a broader array of goods, we might stabilize even that sales tax source of revenue. So those are some recommendations on state budget certainty, and we view those as translating into direct benefit to local governments through a more predictable state-local fiscal partnership. On the adequacy front,
Mr. Carlson,
yes.
We really have a tight schedule. Okay. Just kind of summarize a few of the... Well, I know we're going to hear a lot from you remainder of the year, so...
Let me just then summarize. I apologize for taking too much time, and thank you
we're
for cutting
trying
me off.
To dance.
Because my voice is losing, I'm losing my voice. But please review the report, and we will be visiting with each of you throughout the first weeks of the legislative session here to talk about some of these principles. And we think there's some good food for thought as you consider developing tax policy for the state of Minnesota over the next months. And feel free to contact us if you would like to discuss further any of the recommendations in that report.
Members, any questions for Mr. Carlson? If not, thank you so much. Look forward to working with you this year. The Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities, Mr. Peterson, introduce yourself.
Members, my name is Steve Peterson. I am here on behalf of the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities. And given our short amount of time, I'm going to jump right to it. We are asked here to come today and talk about the effects of property tax and what we'd like to see. And before we go on, I want to kind of go back and see what has happened in the recent years. In your hand chart, in your packet, you should have a chart, has three lines on it. I just want to take a look at this and kind of shows what has happened since the year 2002. To begin with, the grayish line, the grayish blue line, is city revenue base. As you can see, the base is, city revenues since 2000 have gone down and basically remained flat, roughly around 7% decrease. The top line there is the property tax increases that cities in greater Minnesota have felt. As you can see, they have increased approximately 15% since 2002. Meanwhile, aides at the same time have been decreasing. as you can see, at this point, we have cities that have are not increasing in revenue, have increased in property taxes, and decreasing have had a decrease in aid. So what we have our mayors and council members talking about is raising property taxes without actually increasing any type of new spending. So we're raising taxes and not showing anything for it. And to make matters just a little more drastic, too, as far as the pressure that we're feeling out there, is a lot of this property taxes increases have been felt on homeowners. Part of this goes back to 2001 when the legislature compressed the tax rates to make it so that homeowners would feel more of the local taxes when we increase taxes. What happened at that same time, though, as well, is we increased the school aid, we increased local government aid, and in the Ventura years, we actually saw a decrease of property taxes across the state by about 12% in real inflation-adjusted dollars when we increased the school aid and we increased the local government aid. Fast forward to 2003, we saw a cut in local government aid of $150 million. You saw the state unable to continue its funding to schools, forcing more of it back onto the local property taxpayers. Because of the classification change, more of that fell onto homeowners. Combine that with the fact that we have rapidly increasing market values on homes, and we saw the perfect storm for homeowner property tax increases. So, it should come as no surprise, as we are the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities, that one of the aspects we'd like to look at as far as a comprehensive property tax relief bill is local government aid. If you can go to the next chart I got you here with five bars on it. This is just to show kind of one of the reasons local government aid is to be here to begin with. If you start at the left, this chart is showing how much revenue per percentage point of tax rate a city can generate. Or in another way of looking at it is, if you have a tax rate of 1, how much revenue are you generating per person in your city? If we start on the left, you have Virginia that, if they had a tax rate of 1, would generate $3.32 per person. This is on their own without any local government aid. So for Virginia to raise the same amount as Rochester, they would have to have a tax rate 3 times as high as the city of Rochester. For Rochester to have a tax rate the same as Wayzata, to generate the same amount of revenue, they would have to have a tax rate 3 times as high as Wayzata. So you can see across the state there are severe differences in the amount of property wealth that people have. This is one of the primary reasons we have local government aid, is because of this unequal ability to raise revenue across the state. This doesn't even touch the needs portion of the program, which we will get into at a later date. Finally, I want to look at the last graph here. This is kind of, showing how local government aid is working. What I did is I went and I found out what the average city is spending per capita, and it turns out this is in 2004, about $619. I took the cities above 2,500 in population, right above it and right below it, and charted them out here. And the expenditures go with the axis on the left. The blue line, which goes down, starting from over in Sauk Center and going down, is the tax rate of these cities that are all spending roughly the same amount, receiving the same amount of city services. You can see that in Sauk Center, to spend the same amount, they have a tax rate of 77%. As you go all the way down to Medina, with a tax rate of 17%. Now, as you look at this graph, you can tell that the green lines, which are the expenditures, part of it is green, part of it is red. The green portion is what is raised locally. The red portion is what is aided with local government aid. So we go back to Sauk Center again. If they did not receive any local government aid, at a 77% tax rate, they would have less than $400 in spending per capita at a $77 tax rate, well below the average. So they would have the choice of either cutting their services drastically or raising that tax rate even higher above the 77%. I think that as we look forward, going forward into the partnership of the partnership between cities and governments, we have to look at the tax rates and how they're affected. And I think the illustration of what has happened in the past of how when, you know, the state compressed the tax rates and we cut the aid and how it hasn't been able to translate into our city officials raising taxes without showing anything for the result of that. They are actually cutting services. And I think it's good to see look back on that and see what's happened, and we hope that we can work with you to increase the local government aid.
Thank you very much. Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Schumer. On your first chart, blue line, what has happened to the city revenue base?
The city revenue base is the main...
Ms. Peterson?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Mr. Chairman, Representative Earhart. First one, time back. Mr. Chairman, Representative Earhart. The city revenue base went down and has remained flat, basically. We are down 7% since 2006. So we're not increasing our revenue. We're just kind of... We went down and then we kind of stayed flat.
Well, Mr. Chairman...
Representative Earhart.
Why is your city revenue base down? Is your property all gone away, or...?
No.
Mr. Peterson?
Oh, sorry. Representative, or Chairman, Representative Earhart, it's a combination mostly of the reduction in aid, because we are increasing our property taxes, and the revenue base is just your levy plus your aid that is received.
Okay.
So as we increase the aid, property taxes, and we haven't had an increase in aid, our revenue has remained flat.
Any further questions for Representative Lanning?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Peterson, for I think good and helpful information here. I would like to suggest that, not today, but at some point, we have Ms. Dalton talk about a more complete picture here in terms of what happened in 2001 with the tax reform. I think going back to 2002 this is a good and appropriate analysis to see what's happened during this time. But I think to get a more complete picture, we need to look at what were the changes made in 2001 that sort of set the stage for what we've seen on these charts.
Thank you, Representative Lanning. And I want to mention at this time, you bring up a great point, is next week at this tax, this division meeting, we'll have the property tax overview, local sales tax overview by House Research. So that... Ms. Dalton, if you could include that also in as we go over that. So next week, especially some of the new members, will get this overview of the local government aid and all these things that are being talked about today. So, Mr. Peterson, thank you so much.
Thank you, Chairman and members.
I also neglected to introduce our pages, who serve a very important part here. So if starting over here, if you would... Please introduce yourself to the committee.
My name is Kane.
And where are you from?
Ramsey, the city, not the county.
Thank you.
My name is Jennifer Lucas, and
I'm from the county. Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. Next, from the North Metro Mayors. You would please introduce yourself.
Yes, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I am Mark Stephenson. I'm the mayor of Maple Grove. I'm the president of the North Metro Mayors Association. And with me today is Dan Donahue, the city manager of New Hope and chair of the North Metro Mayors Association Operating Committee. The North Metro Mayors Association is a nonpartisan organization of 20 cities created. It was an organization that was created in 1986 to advocate for the interests of the North Metro area communities. Our 20 cities have more than 800,000 citizens and stretch from Minneapolis on the south to Ramsey and Andover on the north, and Circle Pines and Lexington on the east to Dayton on the west. These member cities in our organization is supported by more than 50 other business groups throughout our communities, and we're a very active organization. We were asked to discuss two specific topics today. What has happened to our property taxes in our cities over the last several years, and what are our priorities for the session? Mr. Donahue will present the property tax situation together with our assessment of the local government aid issues. It is from this that North Metro Mayors Association has identified as its highest priority looking at how the LGA program addresses the needs of our older and fully developed cities in the metro area. We believe that with less than major changes, the program can more adequately address the needs of these communities without negative impacts on other cities dependent upon the program. And with that, I'll turn over the rest of the presentation to Mr. Donahue.
Thank you. Mr. Donahue?
Thank you, Mayor. Chairman, my name is Dan Donahue. I'm a city manager of City of New Hope. I've served local government for 36 years, and I'm proud to be here today. We're going to present our story in a series of graphs, which hopefully are before you. The first graph shows what is happening to property taxes due to cities' levies in the North Metro cities. Now, taking that first graph, that second dark blue line shows what has happened to overall municipal levies. They are up. And also that these are, by the way, inflation-adjusted dollars. The third line, the light blue line, shows what has happened to the overall general revenues. That is a combination of taxes and state aids. This line is actually down, even though property taxes are up. The major reason for this is the bottom line, the decline of LGA. Some more on the decline of LGA. The certified LGA for 2007 for North Metro cities is 34% lower than it was in 2003. This at a time when the total LGA appropriations for 2007 is only 18% less than the original 2003 amount. This translates into a loss of $47.1 million. The largest loss was in Minneapolis, a decline of $33 million or 28%. But the percentage loss of the suburban members was 70%, down from $19.1 million to $5.6 million. In 2003, all 20 cities in the North Metro Mayors Association received LGA at some level. By 2005, only 10 were left in the program. Further suburban North Metro cities lost another $4 million when homestead market value credit payments were withheld. All of this brings us to the top line. This is the increase in taxes to homesteaded properties. The cut in LGA, when combined with the shifts enacted in 2001 in rising property values, has meant that this line has actually increased at a greater rate than overall property taxes, with the result being less resources for cities to meet the needs. Now, the second graph, the second page, actually shows my city, which is the city of New Hope. It is included for two reasons. First is to show that the average contained in the graphs, the first graph, are close to the actual situation at least faced by my city. It also shows that another feature of the current LGA program is that it can fluctuate wildly from year to year. As you can see, the decline in aid has not been a constant downward slope for the city of New Hope. There's been a roller coaster. In actual dollars, New Hope went from $1.3 million in 2003, was reduced to $650,000 in 2003. By 2005, it was down to $430,000, then back up to $583,000 last year, and now down to $106,000. So one of our problems, and problems faced by many cities, is the unpredictability of our revenue sources. And LGA is very unpredictable, at least for us. As stated by Mayor Stephenson, the North Metro Mayor has identified as its highest priority looking at how the LGA program addresses the needs of older, fully developed cities in the metro area, especially given the severity of the cuts which many of these cities received between 2003 and 2007. The next four charts demonstrate the fact that not all cities in the metro area are the same, and that those which are older and fully developed have their own distinct characteristics. In all of these charts, Minnesota cities are grouped into four categories: the inner ring, fully developed suburbs, the central cities, the developing suburbs, and greater Minnesota cities. Now, that next chart is the age of housing. While it's true that little of the housing in the inner ring metro area suburban cities is pre-1940, it is also striking that most of it was built in the 25 years after World War II. In fact, outstate cities actually have a little more housing which was built after 1970 than the inner ring metro cities. The important item here is that LGA formula factor for age of housing is only the percentage of pre-1940 housing. That the majority of the housing on the inner ring metro area is that after 1940, or that 35 to 75 years old. Not only is the housing getting old, but so is the infrastructure which serves the housing. And it is in need of reinvestment. Our post-70 housing is similar in age to greater Minnesota cities, as I just said. About 60% of our housing and other infrastructure, again, is over 40 to 70 years old. Now, the next chart is the net capacity chart. Fully developed suburbs lag behind growing cities. We are not all enjoying the lifestyles of our more affluent suburbs, so not all cities are created equal. While many of our suburbs are above the statewide average used in the LGA formula, many are well below the metro average, making it difficult to manage service demands. The next chart is population. Our population is aging in a similar manner to greater Minnesota cities. Many of our older residents are on fixed incomes and are most impacted by property tax escalation in homes purchased some 30 to 50 years ago. The last chart is household income. Across the board, property taxes as a percentage of household income have increased significantly over the past 6 years. Greater Minnesota appears to enjoy an advantage over others. Compared to the 2006 income, comparable 2000 income is not available to North Metro mayors. But you can see by that last chart that the percentage of household income is really quite a bit more in the metro area, especially for the inner ring suburbs, than it is for outstate. We plan to develop and present proposed solutions to the problems we've touched on in the near future. Reflecting on the data presented, it appears that tweaking that addresses our older and fully developed metro city issues will also positively affect many of our greater Minnesota cities. We look forward to further discussion with the committee and stand ready to answer questions. Mayor?
I guess my only closing comments are to thank the chair and the committee members for allowing us to appear today, and we'd also stand for any questions that you may have.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Mr. Donahue, Mayor?
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you. I also want to notify members, we're getting all sorts of materials in that, and as a teacher, there will be a quiz on this at our next meeting. Every week there's going to be a quiz on these materials, just to make sure everyone's keeping up with things. But these are excellent materials. Thank you so much for bringing these forward. The Municipal Legislative Commission. Thank you very much. Good morning, and if you would introduce yourself.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. Tom Pohl with Mesley and Kramer, along with Bill Schreiber. We represent the Municipal Legislative Commission, which is a coalition of 13 suburban communities. There is a handout that's coming around that lists those communities. First, thank you for the opportunity to talk to you a little bit this morning. What we wanted to do was tell you a little bit about what happened in our communities in 2006 with respect to property taxes, and then also wanted to let you know what we're looking at for 2007 in terms of legislative initiatives. With respect to 2006, the handout shows changes, property tax changes roughly from the 3% to mid 12% range. At the high end is Woodbury and Lakeville, and I think primarily because of growth. They're growing communities with growing populations. But there are levy increases that I think are consistent among all of our communities, and those are specifically, one, road funding. I think local communities are paying more in property taxes for roads and road construction than they ever have in the past, and that is reflective in levy increases throughout our communities. Secondly, is public safety. A lot of our communities hire police officers, which is another reflection. And third, voter-approved referendum, I think, are really the three most consistent reasons why property taxes went up. As all of you know, none of our communities received local government aid. However, our communities did participate with respect to the state budget deficit over the last number of years in market value homestead credit cuts. There is a chart that was included in our materials that shows the dollar amount to each city over the last number of years with respect to those cuts. I think from here I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Schreiber to let him explain what some of the initiatives are for 2007.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. What we wanted to be upfront as it related to the property tax percentage increases for 2007. And as Tom indicated, quite a bit of this, the theme that runs throughout this is levy increases to accommodate transportation issues. And we would argue that that's directly related to the lack of increase in funding for the municipal state aid formula. That's the 9% of the highway trust fund that goes out to cities. And as you're well aware, no gas tax increase since 1988. There's going to be some relief as a result of the constitutional amendment that was adopted, but that's going to equate about to 6 cents a gallon. Well, we do the comparison with the additional roads that are a part of the state aid system, the additional communities that have exceeded 5,000 over the last 15 years, and then equate that with the amount of increase in revenue, we're way short. And even with the motor vehicle sales tax, you could say that that may come close to about 40% of the gap, but there's another 60% to be filled. And then on top of that, as it relates to city and county roads, we have higher safety standards. You know, there are left turn lanes and right turn lanes and signals that are part of the standards today that weren't there in 1988, and there's a cost associated with that. For the cities and for the counties, if the money isn't coming in from the state aid formulas, there's no place to go but the property taxpayer. And I think that's a general theme that you're going to find from cities throughout the state. So keep in mind that one of the areas that you can look at in terms of property tax relief for cities is additional funding for the highway system. Representative Earhart, I know you'd be happy to hear that. Second item, we feel that there's a huge amount of confusion on the part of taxpayers. And if you remember, those of you that read the Star Tribune, there was an article, a series of articles, right before the election talking about increase in property tax. There was never any mention of effective tax rate where there was a comparison between one community and another. It was non-existent. There was no mention whatsoever about the circuit breaker and the fact that a number of those people, based upon the incomes that they were talking about, would have had huge relief coming from the circuit breaker, and yet the reporters neglected to mention that. So we believe there's some educational effort that needs to go into this. Number one, by adding the effective tax rate onto truth and taxation statements as well as the property tax statement. It's the one measure that is used consistently to measure how one state is doing and property taxes compared to another. If you want to see how you compare with Arkansas or California and so on, you look up the effective tax rate. We think it would be beneficial for Minnesotans to be able to compare effective tax rates in International Falls or Detroit Lakes or Moorhead or Minneapolis or a suburban community, because there's a relationship there. And forget about the percentages of increases and decreases and so on. I think what people really ought to be focused on is how are we doing in terms of an effective tax rate. So we think by being more upfront about that, and it's going to take some time before the public really understands it, that if their effective tax rate went down from one year to another, well, maybe the reason is more that the property tax went up is more a result of their increase in value as compared to increases in local government spending. So that's one element that I think is worthy of discussion. And the next one is targeting the property tax relief to individuals. And your staff can assist you. You have the benefit of maturity in tax staff within the House, and that is a real blessing because there's some institutional memory there. But the fact is, as property taxes have been looked at, evaluated over the years, I think there's been an academic consensus that simply throwing money in general aid programs is not necessarily a cost-effective means of property tax relief. So Representative Mullery, in the case of Minneapolis, where you have problems with escalating property taxes on some of your homeowners, if you dump all of that so-called relief into local government aid, it's going to help out your downtown businesses just like it helps out your North Minneapolis residents. On the other hand, targeting that into the circuit breaker allows you the opportunity to direct it towards the people that you really believe need the relief. So we hope you spend a fair amount of time in looking at that targeted relief towards individuals as any component in property tax relief. And then lastly, we support the phase-out of the limited market value. I think the Department of Revenue, as well as Hennepin County assessors and so on, can illustrate what's going on there, but it's very tempting, I know, from a political standpoint to say we're going to freeze the value of your property. But what happens is that you have the many subsidizing the few. The increases are in market value are not uniform throughout a community. You're going to find as you get into hearing from the Department of Revenue and so on is that market values are continuing to go up around the lakes and some very desirable locations, and every place else they flattened out. So what you're seeing for property taxes in payable 2007 are not going to look like what's going to happen in 2008 because of this flattening out of market values. Homeowners maintain more of the share of the tax burden as compared to businesses, and that is about to end. So we think just allowing that current law to take effect, and that is the elimination of the limited market value, is the right thing to do.
Thank you. Any questions? Representative Mullery.
Mr. Chairman and former Representative Shriver, I'm just wondering if the homeowners in these cities understand what the effect of what you're asking for, because even with the circuit breaker, the effect of phasing out limited market value is going to shift a lot more taxes onto homesteads off of businesses. And so I'm wondering if your homeowners really understand that when you're pushing that.
Mr. Shriver.
Mr. Chairman, there are much better experts than myself to talk about that. I think you should bring in Tom May, the Hennepin County assessor, that can show exactly what's going to happen for 2008, but you've had a rapid escalation of market values in the city of Minneapolis. I think what you have to think about from a policy standpoint, you've had people that have lived in your district for the last 25 years and have probably seen a fourfold increase in the value of their property, and many of those people couldn't qualify to buy the home they live in today. In other words, their incomes does not match the rapid increase in value of the home. You have other folks that have moved in recently and their incomes do match the value of the home. One of the ways of accommodating those people that have been there a long time and really can't afford to live in, but based upon their income, couldn't qualify for a mortgage on their home today, is to help them out with the circuit breaker.
Mr. Chairman, just one more question. Also, I noticed that it's all suburbs, I think, that you represent. Do you think it's fair that in the 90s we had the full limited market value in there when the suburban properties were escalating fast, when it shifted to Minneapolis properties and relations going up faster, that we started phasing it out so that suburban homeowners got the full limited market effect when their properties were going up and the inner cities didn't when theirs were going up?
Mr. Shriver.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mullery, I think that one of the problems with limited market values is that if you have an extraordinarily low base to begin with and apply a percentage to a low base, the movement can't go up very much. I mean, my wife and I own a cabin up in St. Louis County. It started out at $35,000, and obviously it's worth more than that today. But when you start capping that at a 10 or 15% increase, it goes up very, very slowly. the people in the suburban communities that may have started out with a $200,000 home or $250,000 home and had a limited market cap, you know, it ends up being $25,000 or $40,000 that it can go up each year compared to anyone that started out with a low base. So we think that creates some distortions there, that you're better off just allowing to phase it out, get rid of it, and if there are problems with those lower valued homes as a result of the increase in value in the escalation of property taxes, accommodate that with the circuit breaker.
Mr. Schreiber, Mr. Paul, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And hearing all of that discussion and all the time, I think this is a great time to introduce our tax chair, Representative Lincheski, because I want to thank you again. I mentioned it to the members, not only for helping to set up the scope of this division, but also for allowing us some time to overspill into your tax committee time. And as you can hear, we will have plenty of time for debate. So thank you for that, Madam Chair, if you would introduce yourself.
Thank you, Chairman Marquardt. I'm Ann Lincheski. I represent Bloomington, and I'm happy to be here.
Thank you very much. Association of Small Cities. If you would introduce yourself. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Dave Engstrom. I'm with Pace, Minnesota, and we represent the Minnesota Association of Small Cities. Appreciate the opportunity to be here. Just a little background on the Minnesota Association of Small Cities. We are a membership organization of cities of 5,000 population or less. We currently have about 350 cities in our organization. We're governed by a 12-member board who develops our policies, legislative policies that we bring forth to the state capitol. A couple issues on LGA, which and our board chair, who is John Young Jr. from Holly, Minnesota, which is a great little town up in the northwestern part of the state, a population of about 1,800. He was here yesterday. He apologizes for not being able to be here today. But we had a discussion in the legislative policies, and I said, what happens when LGA is cut in your city? He said, well, we had a cut. And a few years ago, what happened is we had to decide, do we not fill one of the COPS positions? Do we lay off somebody else? Do we cut back on the community center hours? Or do we raise taxes? That's basically what it boils down to. The other thing he asked me to stress is that the reliability and stability is of LGA is so important, because when there's a formula that provides a lot of volatility, a city council sits there from year to year putting together its budget, and they're trying to decide, boy, can we rely on the LGA, what we're getting this year? What do we do? Find out it's cut, and we wind up having to raise taxes. And in some cases, and our board president, John Young, likes to say, you know, he's talked to a lot of mayors who, when you're told, well, you'll have to cut staff, well, it's the mayors who are going to be out plowing the roads in the winter. So the couple things that he asked me to relate to you is reliability and stability of the formula. And the second thing is, and as most you know, the formulas for local government aid, there are two formulas. One of them is specific to cities of 2,500 or less. So there are two formulas. That's it. I'm short and brief this morning, Mr. Chair.
Thank you so much. Any questions? And Representative Lanning, hearing mayors out plowing snow is a real scary thought. So we need to help you out. So thank you so much.
I was a former mayor, and I don't want to be.
Thank you so much. Last of the city groups here today is the Association of Metro Municipalities, but changing their name to the Metro Cities. If you would come forward. And good morning, and if you would introduce yourself.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. In conclusion, my name is Louis Jamboy. I'm the executive director of Metro Cities. Metro Cities, the Association of Metropolitan Municipalities, is 85 cities in the 7-county metropolitan area, and that includes the core cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul, the fully developed suburbs, the developing area of the Twin Cities, and the urban fringe. Our cities are home to about 90% of the Twin Cities area's population. With me today is Steve Larson. He's the president of Metro Cities and the mayor of New Brighton, and Steve's got a couple of things he'd like to say.
First of all, Mr. Chair and committee, it's a pleasure to be here. I would talk a lot longer, but my voice is still a little hoarse from singing happy birthday on Wednesday night to a certain special person. So,
Mayor Larson, I'll stop you right there. And you almost did not get the invite this morning for that night, but I did appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah. Happy 30th again.
Yes, thanks.
Speaking from a city, it's just interesting being up here and testifying on behalf of my current position as president of Metro Cities, where the last 4 years I've been up here as North Metro Mayor's president. So I'm changing hats. But coming from New Brighton, we're a city that's 120 years old. We have 33% of our city is rental. We have aging populations sticking around. They love location. They like the safety. But they're also seeing a drastic increase in their property taxes. We lost all of our local government aid in 2003 and 4. It disappeared. We lost $1 million overnight. And what we did, if you remember, back in 2003, we were allowed not to have the taxation hearing because we're going to have to raise our taxes max of 51% on our levy. We only could justify 48%, so we made some cuts off of that. That was a drastic hit on a lot of people. Did we see any benefits? Well, we maintained services. That's about it. Formed a task force to look at any other ways we could cut services, collaborate with other communities to try to decrease the tax impact. And we've done everything we can. And when we're looking at redeveloping our area, which we're one of those cities that's basically restricted to where we go. Our boundaries are Moundsview to the north, Fridley to the west, Arden Hills to the east, and Roseville and St. Anthony to the south. We can't go anywhere. We're redeveloping the second biggest parking lot of 694 and 35W that we can. We got 100 acres we're trying to redevelop that's full of contamination with the Superfund. Money's gone out of the EPA. We're having to put a lot of that bill ourselves. We need assistance. Our citizens need some type of property tax relief. And our money that we're having to put out on basically a yearly basis now to clean up our city is not going down. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, what we're really talking about are property taxes. And the purpose of property taxes, of course, are to finance the basic services that are provided to us that allow us to run our lives. These services are the literal foundation for economic prosperity in this state, and they've been provided so reliably by our cities that most of us take them for granted, and we shouldn't. It's important, I think, for these services to be provided across the state in a uniform and equitable way. And as a result, Metro Cities endorses the Financing Local Government Task Force report that Gary Carlson talked about. We understand the importance of uniform, reliable service provision, and we endorse a strong local state fiscal partnership. We've got a variety of positions in Metro Cities on taxation, but the one area we really wanted to talk to you about today was LGA. It's a critical component of the fiscal partnership between the state and cities. We know that it's been cut, and we know that several of the cuts have been restored, and we appreciate the restoration of those cuts. But we have to also point out that the restoration of those cuts was not done in a uniform basis. In 2001, the Greater Minnesota versus Metro Area LGA split was 56% to 44% Greater Minnesota to the Metro Area. In 2007, That split was 66%, 34%. Several of our more affluent members don't receive LGA, and they're not asking for any LGA. We did pass out some charts, and I won't go through those because they just sort of reinforce what we're talking about, and they're pretty self-explanatory. Left out in the LGA restoration, though, is the fully developed area, the metropolitan area, primarily the inner ring suburbs. These cities are characterized by aging infrastructure, aging housing, aging people, and increasing blight and contamination. There's been some real recent information produced by Decision Resources. It's a private polling group that suggests that in the metro area, it's the residents of the fully developed area that are most concerned with increasing property taxes. And we think there's a hook between LGA and property tax increases in the fully developed area. We understand that LGA is not going to undergo a major reform this year, and we're quite okay with that. But we've got a request for you and the members today. It is to increase the size of the local LGA appropriation. And please, within that context, we hope that the fully developed area of the metropolitan area can capture a greater share of that growth. We're not asking for any cuts to greater Minnesota communities. We wouldn't do that. We're not even asking for a 50-50 distribution. We don't want to do that either. But what we want to do is reverse, if we can, to some degree, that 66-34% split. We'd also, I know Gary Carlson didn't talk about it, but we are also working with advocacy groups to work on the volatility issue of LGA that affects everybody across the state. Again, Mr. Chair, we are working with all of the advocacy groups. We very much appreciate you bringing us all in today to talk to us. And we appreciate the opportunity to address you today, and we look forward to working with you and the other groups as we proceed.
Thank you very much. Any questions for Mayor Larson or Mr. Jamboy? Representative Lincheski.
Thank you, Chair Marquardt. Mr. Jamboy, I just have a question about, or Mayor Larson possibly. I had dinner with Mayor Larson 2 nights ago, and I learned a lot, so I appreciate that. And that was a good event, the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities, and there were actually some Metro folks there. So I do want to ask you, you have a difficult task, and the League has a more difficult task because they represent the whole state. You get to represent most of the Metro. When you talk about the LGA, you know, members, I have found, often confuse the debate between the formula and funding. And so often people are upset about what happened, and they may be focused on the reduced funding, or they may be focused on the change in the formula. Other cities understand that if you'd fully fund the formula, you'd actually do better now than previously. And do you know, with your 90 cities or whatever you said it was, have you ever taken a look how many of those communities, if the formula was fully funded, would now do better than they used to, and how many would not? Or kind of what's the share that's looking for funding and what's the share that's looking for formula change?
Mr. Jamboy?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Lincheski. We are going through that exercise right now in conjunction with North Metro mayors and the League and others. I think the short answer is it's probably a little bit of both. We believe if LGA is fully funded, of course all boats rise to some degree. But a higher percentage of zero for some communities is still zero, and there are some cities that have been zeroed out that probably shouldn't be, or some cities that are getting such a low amount that a percentage rise isn't really going to help them very much, and that's what we're trying to flesh out right now.
Thank you.
Representative Mulry.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You won't be able to answer this now, but I'd like you to, I know I'm worried about the inner ring suburbs and what's happening. You mentioned the blight and contamination. As I'm sitting here thinking, you got hit with all, within a few years, the changes in TIF, which hurt the older suburbs on trying to remediate that, then eminent domain, LGA changes, property tax changes, the loss of money for your old department, the brownfields remediation. Is there a way you could come up with the tremendous hit that that's had on your altering suburbs? And obviously not right now.
Mr. Gamble?
Mr. Chair, Representative Mullery, we could certainly take a run at it and see if we could identify an impact. It may not be statewide, but we may be able to do it on a selected city basis, so we'll take a run and see what we can do.
Gentlemen, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And I really want to, again, thank all the city groups for testifying, and I think, members, you heard property taxes are certainly a concern. How we get there to relief to make sure that we have an even across-the-board approach to property tax relief is going to be our challenge. So I do appreciate all that information. Before we go on here, we have a member who's just joined us. Representative Paymer, would you care to introduce yourself?
Sorry, I'm late, Mr. Chair. I had a meeting with my school board this morning that I had committed to weeks ago. Michael Paymer, I represent District 64B, which is the western portions of St. Paul.
Oh, thank you very much. We will be ending at 9:30. We have counties to hear from. We're not going to hear from all of them today, but what I would ask is that if there is someone here that has come from afar or cannot make it back, and so I'd like you to go first. So does that apply to anyone here where you've brought in someone to testify that has come in for the day, especially for this? Is there any of the county groups that have that situation? Okay. So what we will do then is stick to the schedule. And I think it's valuable, these first few meetings, to hear these many issues from these many different groups that represent different folks around the state, and they all have different concerns, and that's what makes, I guess, our goal a lot more challenging in how we can put all of this together. So with that, we will call the Association of Minnesota Counties.
Chairman, thank you very much.
Thank you.
My name is Peter McLaughlin. I'm a Hennepin County Commissioner. I'm here representing today representing the Association of Minnesota Counties, which is a voluntary statewide organization serving all 87 counties in the state of Minnesota. I'm a former president of AMC, currently a member of their board and legislative steering committee, and in the interest of full disclosure, a former member of the House Tax Committee some time ago. And it's very nice to be back in front of a subcommittee of the Tax Committee. On behalf of AMC and county officials from across the state of Minnesota, I really want to thank this committee and the legislature for making property tax relief a priority for the 2007 legislative session. And I would ask you, before you get into the very complicated business of crafting tax relief proposals, to take away a couple messages from the counties across Minnesota here today. One is that counties are a little different from cities. We have responsibilities, mandated responsibilities from the state of Minnesota, and that we carry those out on a daily basis on behalf of the state. Property tax relief, in that regard, we believe that property tax relief, to do that adequately, it's going to require an understanding of the responsibilities that counties have for delivering services on behalf of the state, because our primary source of revenue is the property tax. So some of these things may go beyond the province of the tax committee directly. Some of it has to do with appropriations for services that we are mandated to provide. And we have to, in the event of a shortfall in revenue from the state or the federal government, we have to use property taxes to fill the hole. And I'm going to talk about a few of those holes that have been created in the last several years. But our shared objective across our 87 counties is to try to restore a robust state and local partnership for the financing and delivery of critically needed public services. And that includes a rebalancing, frankly, of how the services are funded through state revenue sources as opposed to reliance upon property taxes. And we think if there's going to be property tax relief, that issue needs to be taken up. Three contributing factors. The counties, we are the largest local government levier of property taxes.
put that on the table, right in front of everybody. There are three sources of pressure on county budgets, which have been translated into property tax increases in recent years. Mandated services, demographic shifts, and reduced state and federal aids. On the mandated service side, we are the state's representative. We are an instrumentality of the state in providing these services as part of a state-supervised, county-administered system of social services. It includes things like child protection services, which are essential, which are sort of a basic responsibility of society, and we provide those services on behalf of the state of Minnesota. Provide those services, we also are administering chemical health services and other services that are critical. And there have been significant cuts in the amount of support that we're provided to provide those services. In addition, there have been places where there have been shifts where local government, county government's been asked to pick up these costs. So let me just give you a couple examples. ICFMR costs. The counties now have to pay 20% of the costs of ICFMRs across the state. In the past, we didn't have to pay any of that. The state would pay for those costs. Nursing home costs for individuals under the age of 65, we're now paying 20% of those costs. In the past, we didn't provide any of those costs, cover any of those costs. Mental health costs, 20% of the costs of people who were referred from our counties to the RTCs, the regional treatment centers, and 10% of the cost of forensic patients, people who are mentally ill and dangerous, sexual predators who've been in the news. We are paying 20% of the cost of the RTC and 10% of the cost for forensic patients, and that's about property taxes, folks. We have to use property taxes to pay those costs, which had heretofore been assumed by and carried by the state of Minnesota because it's a statewide responsibility. Those are just examples. We're happy to provide you with more. In summary, on that point, we think that in recent years, the state has used county budgets, and that is property taxes, to help absorb costs and balance the state's budget in the time of this fiscal crisis. County budgets became, in effect, integrated into the state budget, and costs were shifted on to our revenue source, the property tax. We believe if you're going to deal with property taxes, that we need an integrated approach to property tax relief in this session. And we think that there needs to be a look at the services that we're being asked to provide through property taxes, as well as the way in which the property tax works. Second point is demographic shifts. That's put a significant burden on us as well. And I'll be real quick about this. Aging populations that we're providing services for, new non-English speaking residents, and frankly soon veterans coming back, and already veterans coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan. In our own county, we've added a veteran service officer with property taxes in anticipation of the increase in vets coming back from those conflicts. In addition, there have been reduced resources that have been provided to counties. Let me take you to just the lagging resources, is what I'm going to call this graph. You've got this in front of you. This is just Hennepin County. It's part of one of the partnerships that exist in the state for Community Corrections Act counties. This is just our numbers. But since this is supposed to be a partnership between the state and the county. As you can see, since 1978, there's been a little more than a doubling of the amount of resources that the state has provided in this partnership. And Hennepin County's share has increased more than five times. And that is property taxes that have gone up over five times. At the same time, we have back to the shifts, we're being asked to take care of short-term offenders in Hennepin County, short-term state offenders. And we're getting paid, was on the order of $11 a day in 05, $11.34 a day in 05, and $9.70 a day for each of these state prisoners in 06. And our costs, statewide, the costs are over $55 a day. And it's using up our capital, our capacity to deal with short-term offenders in Hennepin County and in other counties across the state. So again, it was a shift by the state onto local property taxes and a consumption of our capacity to deal with our own responsibilities for those offenders who are sentenced for less than a year and a day. If I can ask you to look at this graph, just to leave it in your, sort of, if I want to leave one picture in your head from the county perspective, This is the one I would like you to look at. And that is, starting at the bottom, total state aid to counties. That has gone up, that has gone down since 2002 by more than 20%. And the 2007 figures are projections, but they can be relied upon. So, total state aid to counties has gone down by more than 20% per capita. Total county revenues have gone down by more than 10%. In consequence of that, total county property taxes have gone up per capita by 5%, but it's only 5% compared to these huge reductions. And county property taxes on homesteads have gone up by almost 20%. And that's a product of state policy shifts that were made at the beginning of this decade and some of the market value changes that have occurred. But this is the picture I'd like you to look at, and it asks you to consider in considering the county's position here on property tax relief, because we have seen huge cuts in state aid. We have seen only modest increases in county property taxes, but we've seen that homestead property taxes have gone up pretty dramatically. So we stand ready to work with this committee during the course of this session as you pursue property tax relief for the state of Minnesota. We think we should be a big part of that effort, because we are the largest source of property taxes right now in the state of Minnesota. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd be happy to answer questions.
Commissioner, thank you so much. Appreciate you being here today. I'm sorry, Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Goffin, on the other side of the coin, didn't the state take over the court system pretty much in the counties?
Commissioner McLaughlin.
Mr. Chairman, there was a state takeover of the court system that was fairly complex. There was my recollection, and somebody better affirm this, there was a trade-off, though, in terms of the amount of money that we received because of that, and there are still some remaining costs that we have.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
Representative Earhart.
Were there other areas besides the court system that the state took over? And
Mr. Chairman, yes, there were. There was a block granting. Maybe we better get a staff person up here so I get the terminology right. But there was a block granting that occurred for children's programs, for example. And you can argue the merits of block granting, but the iron rule of block granting was applied, which is you take all the programs, mush them together into a block grant. And then the state reduced the overall amount of money, not by the usual 10% in my iron rule of block granting, but by more than that. And so what you had was less capacity, frankly, under the block granted system than we had before when they combined the programs. That's an example. So, Representative, I'd also say you are very familiar with transportation. And statewide, there is over $900 million, approaching $1 billion worth of property tax and property-based assessments that are paid out every year in the state of Minnesota for roads. And that's because, as you know, there has not been an increase in the gas tax, which we share since 1988 when I voted for it here as a member of the House. And beyond that, there has been the several fixes that we've had in recent years have not included any local share for either cities or counties. The new fix, the MVEST amendment, will provide some help in that regard. But there's been an increasing reliance,
Commissioner,
on roads.
Yes, okay. Thank you very much. And hopefully we will not be talking about gas tax increases in this committee. We have enough to do. So just a couple of housekeeping things. Commissioner, thank you so much for your testimony. We will have the other county groups, and I apologize we did not get to you, but we needed to. I think it's fair to cover all of this, at least to get some sort of a perspective. We'll have you on next week. A couple housecleaning items. Please do not remove your committee folders from the room. And also, if you have any papers that you would like to keep, place them in the save portion. Our next meeting is next Friday, January 19th. But then, in Representative Paymar, I mentioned, we will be, you're not also on the tax, right, you're one of the five also not on the tax committee. But it looks like your schedule is free for the Tuesday and Wednesdays when tax committee meets 10 to 11:30. So just don't get on any other committees at this point. But probably that following week, and Representative Lubchesky and I need to talk about this, but we have a little bit already. Possibly that next week, which would be the 23rd or 24th, we may have a division meeting at that time. Representative Lubchesky, any comments on that you have?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess Representative Marquardt and I were thinking about how much work needs to be done in the property tax area, and noting that we're in a different situation where we have some members who are not on both committees, we were both surprised to learn that. And so we're going to make it work. But we do want to spend more time on property taxes than once a week on Fridays. So I'm actually intending, with Representative Marquardt, when we can get this straight, to cancel a number of the full tax committee meetings and instead try to have some extra property tax committee meetings, because it is so complex, and I think bipartisanly all of us heard in all of our campaigns that everyone cares about it. So we want to give this committee a lot more time to do a very thoughtful product. So we mostly had someone trying to figure out all your schedules so we could find a time to meet, and we've just completed that process. So we're hoping not to impose on people who aren't on full committee. We don't want any more meetings, but I think this committee just has up to do a lot of work still. So that's what Representative Marquardt is hoping to do, is have a few more meetings, just at least in the first half of the session.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And with that, all have a very nice weekend, and we are adjourned.